You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
This edition of It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, your partner for global wealth creation. Welcome to It's My Money. It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, South Africa's multi-award-winning boutique wealth manager. This week I'm speaking to Aaron Ruttenberg, and his article, which is about to be published, and we'll give you details later, is, I think, quite rebellious. The headline is, the JSE is outperforming. Here's why that's not the point. Aaron's with me now. Aaron, please explain.
Hi, Lindsay, and hi to your listeners. I think it's a very important point. I think a lot of people are looking at the JSE's outperformance of offshore markets over the past year and are wondering why they're not in the JSE. And that's just typically the behavioral finance that we get. It's not about performance, but it's about the behavior that drives performance. Individual behavior is always what detracts returns more than anything. So when you look at the recent performance, obviously it's been around 40% versus the global world index at 15%. And the recommendation is, rather than try and switch your entire portfolio, which would be poor advice, it's to make sure you are adequately diversified, because there's always a portion of one's portfolio that will underperform another portion. That's true diversification. I think I can't remember the other person that I listened to that said true diversification is actually disliking part of your portfolio.
Okay, so let's get back to basics, because when people say, look at the all-share index or look at the top 40 index, isn't the JSE doing well? It's not doing well if you break it down. Look, let me say it again. It is doing well, but with a few caveats. And one of the caveats is the US dollar. And I used to know a chap in London, and he used to say to me, Lindsay, look at gold through yen spectacles. Now, he was a bit mad, but at the time he was right. But what you want to do is look at the JSE through dollar spectacles.
That's correct. And I think when the article is published, there's quite a significant amount of information, because I like to talk. But when you price South African wealth in dollars, the currency in which most global goods and services travel, education ultimately denominates it, etc., a very different picture emerges. Over the past 17 years, South African wealth measured in dollars has declined by approximately 30 to 40% in purchasing power. So the rand's moved from rough parity, 1-to-1 with the dollar in the 1970s, to more than 17.1 today. You know, it depends on the day, but nominal rand returns, however impressive they might be, must be viewed through the dollar lens. It's not a pessimistic framing. It's actually an accurate one. The question for any wealth management strategy is not what the number says in rands, but what it buys in the real world. And that erosion is silent, just like inflation, but it's relentless.
The other one that really caught my eye in your article is the following. And this is really, really huge. It says the following: a commodity windfall, not a structural recovery. In other words, the JSE has been driven by a very few counters. In other words, it's been very narrow. It hasn't been a broad-based recovery. And therefore, the structural recovery that you speak of is not there. It doesn't mean to say it's not going to be there. It's not there yet. So we have to be very careful when we have a look at the JSE and say it's doing well, because, yes, it is doing well on a statistical basis, which has been devised by other people, but in reality, it's not doing that well.
Well, we need to really dig deep into what the JSE is actually made up of and constructed of, and how this country, South Africa, earns its revenues, most importantly. And that's essentially a glorified mining type of country. So, you know, gold's hit record highs above 5,000 per ounce, along with elevated prices for manganese and copper. In the same period, South African manufacturing has contracted by 4%. The market's booming. The economy is not booming. I mean, Magnus Haystack even described it in an interview where it's a temporary commodity windfall rather than a reversal of a long-term structural decline. That's where we're looking, and we're seeing that structural decline in how we are able to buy things internationally. And the structural case for, you know, things like, you know, global diversification most South African equity funds are fishing in the same pond. So it's a very small one, Naspers, Richemont, et cetera, a handful of banks maybe, and some miners. The results that their returns converge almost regardless of the management quality. So offshore, by contrast, you know, investors access higher growth sectors like AI, biotech, and blockchain. You can't get that here, as well as specific regional players, Japan, which has done phenomenally well, 22% in dollar terms, reaching all-time highs. So parts of even Africa, excluding South Africa, return better in dollar terms. So these are opportunities that are largely unavailable through the JSE.
Are you saying that when I came to South Africa in 1988 and it was a commodity country and the rand was a commodity currency, and when in 1970 South Africa produced 1,100 tons of gold and it was a commodity country and the rand was a commodity currency, are you saying that nothing really has changed since then, Aaron, because we haven't diversified enough in order to make ourselves a player when it comes to stock market performance? In other words, having SA Inc. companies that are doing really well and challenging the commodity counters.
That's correct. In fact, what has changed is that it's gotten worse, because our commodity plays can also be purchased offshore. They don't have to be purchased locally. And that's just the commodity side. So, you know, you've got Anglo Gold, BHP, Glencore, Anglo American. They're secondary listed here. So when you look at people that we need to invest offshore, people, you know, investors that we need to bring money into the country, sometimes they don't have to go and bring money into SA. They can just invest on those counters offshore rather than locally here, bringing their money back where the actual rand may even weaken further, and then it would be all kind of costly. So things have changed, to answer your question. It's just they've changed for worse, and there's a lot of bureaucracy when it comes to, you know, all the mining and what can be done and the red tape, and we've just fallen flat. We're not even in the top gold producers of the world anymore. I mean, there are other countries that produce, like Australia. And whilst we don't get that correct from a political standpoint, and I won't get into politics, but it is a problem, we can't maintain our shine like we did.
Okay, and just to finish on that note, we have to say that the throughout history, commodities are cyclical. They go up and they keep on going up, and the news gets better and it gets better and better. And then just before the top, the mining houses decide that they're going to expand their mining operations, or they're going to buy another company some in some far-flung land to increase production. And then that is when the price peaks. Let's talk about politics now, because you don't want to talk about politics, but you do mention it. You say the South African government debt is approaching 80% of GDP. That has got an influence, although we have been treated fairly favourably with getting off the grey list and also upgrade from rating agencies, but still a problem. The problem is there in the background, Aaron.
Exactly. So, like you've said, South African government debt's approached 80% of GDP, and we've got a shrinking tax base. I know plenty of people that have left this country because they are looking to, you know, start up in other countries. So this tax base is small. It's getting smaller, and most of a very small part of the population contributes to that tax base. And if it shrinks or even isn't even allowed to grow, people that are leaving that haven't even started paying tax, that makes it even worse. The long-term structural risks to domestic assets therefore remain real. Moving a meaningful portion therefore offshore is obviously not a speculative call. It's a defensive one. And, you know, at the same time, there is an interview that Magnus speaks about in his 20 to 30 minutes with Rob Herseff. Great interview, discussing more of those politics. And yeah, that's just to answer that question. I think it's a bit more nuanced, but we structurally, when you come and look physically at dilapidating infrastructure, we really realize that, you know, the JSE is relied on the commodities. It's also relied on a handful of offshore companies already, with a 75% when you include the exporters and when you include the primary companies the secondary companies that are primarily listed offshore. 75% actually is offshore already, and these companies have gone and looked through an offshore or gone offshore to try and get more capital because of what's structurally happening here in South Africa with a very small tax base and a high unemployment as well. Let's not forget that.
They say the following: there are lies, damn lies, and statistics, but you've given me 2 decades of data in this article, so briefly summarize them, please.
So I did 2 sets of 10 years, right? Because we've seen quite a good picture for the JSE on the past year, and we've seen a good picture for the JSE even in 2023 and 2024. So you look across the 10 years, the previous 10 years, and I've compared it to the All Country World Index, which is just a better benchmark. It includes all the countries of the world, developed and developing. And over the past 10 years, the All Country World Index has done 13%, and the South African Stock Exchange, the JSE, has done 12% in rands. And that is 1% differential. So the All Country World Index still wins. It's a small gap. But then you go and look at the previous year, the previous 10 years before that, and the JSE did 9.61%, and the All Country World did 18.19%. So that's quite significant. It's double the returns, and that's not including, you know, just saying the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ. That would have done even better, but we need to be very much more diversified across the globe. So I'm using the All Country World Index. You add that for a period of time, and then the compounding becomes significant. So even like the past, the great returns that the JSE has given over a couple of periods over the past 10 years, there's still a 1% alpha within the All Country World Index, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, the data cannot be ignored. You say a diversified global allocation is not a recommendation to exit South Africa. A lot of people have said to Magnus, who you've mentioned a couple of times, that he's anti-South Africa, he's not patriotic, which is, of course, a lot of nonsense. He's been proved right over the years as a representative and founder of Brenthurst. You're saying exactly the same thing. And I think what you're saying here is that someone's portfolio is a bespoke affair rather than off-the-shelf affair. So you sit down with a client and say, okay, this is what your income is, this is what your disposable income is, this is what your investment income is, and we'll start from there. What are your aims and what are your aspirations, I suppose?
Exactly. We're not being paid to be patriotic. We're being paid to make clients money so that they can retire in global terms. If they want to travel, if they want to watch Netflix, if they want to have their Apple phone or Samsung, whatever it is. So, you know, it's not about exiting South Africa. South Africa plays a good point in any diversified portfolio because of what we've seen, but it's actually a well-constructed portfolio depending on one's needs and time horizon. Of course, there's people that are different and that have different risk profiles and time horizons and needs, but it's a well-constructed portfolio. It needs to hold local and global exposure. It needs to be sized appropriately to each investor's circumstances. The offshore component serves as a structural role: purchasing power preservation, access to deeper and more diverse markets, protection against long-term currency erosion. And, you know, there's no short-term return comparison between indices that can capture or replace. So the JSE can have its best year in memory. The case for global diversification, as I've said, for many reasons, remains unchanged.
Yeah, that's how you end it, actually. I was going to read that myself, but thank you for doing it for me. So business as usual, it doesn't matter whether the JSE has a good year or a good 2 years. The fact is that long-term diversification in other geographies is the way to go.
Exactly, as well as looking for investment opportunities when things are going down. If you've got a long-term time horizon and you're still growing capital, embrace any down period. Embrace COVID. Embrace the Trump tariff tantrums. Embrace the 2022 Ukraine crisis. I know it's a crisis. I'm talking from an investment point of view. We didn't get the same type of embracement with this Iran war, but any time the market goes down and you can buy things cheaper, treat it as if it's the same as a sale at your favorite retailer. Go and buy. So, yes.
The one last comment I want to make, and it suddenly struck me, is that if you look at the JSE and you look at the JSE's recent history and look at the listings, okay, there's been some listings, but nothing of any consequence. There aren't any AI companies coming to the JSE. Remember when Dimension Data came to the JSE and there was a flurry of tech stocks coming in? We don't see that anymore, Aaron. I'm not saying the JSE is a dead exchange, but what I'm saying is it's not being boosted by companies that, for example, I don't know, the NYSE or the NASDAQ or any other index in the United States is enjoying. People are coming to America to do their business. They're not doing their business in South Africa, and that affects the JSE.
Exactly. We're shrinking. We need liquidity. People looking at the management. Warren Buffett looks at the management of a company. The management of our country has not managed the country's finances correctly, just like any company. So people are looking to raise capital in different jurisdictions. We're looking at now, you know, SpaceX is going to list. It doesn't matter what it's going to list at, it's going to list. Anthropic, which is an AI company, OpenAI, these are all being listed offshore, and for good reason, because there's money, there's capital, there's more trusted management, despite what you think, needs to be listed somewhere, and it's not being listed here. So we get a lot of these types of queries and questions, and that's the same thing. You know, that's why we go offshore, because we can find those opportunities.
Aaron, great chat as always. Thanks very much for your time. Aaron Ruttenberg is from Brentos Wealth, and that was It's My Money. It's My Money was brought to you by Brentos Wealth, an award-winning boutique wealth management company.